So in summary of a little bit of what we discussed yesterday, that the sense, the purpose of the Grihastha Ashram is for helping the living entity come closer to Krishna, then based on this, all other aspects or decisions must be made. So then this means it makes it, the approach to the ashram becomes very different than is popularly understood. So rather than the considerations of the Grihastha Ashram are founded on the physical platform or physical attraction or physical contact, because of the spiritual foundation, then it must be approached from a different way. So this means that the consideration for marriage is not how attractive someone is, or, you know, some other material reason like that. That is not the basis. Or the interest in sense gratification, or the facilities of sense gratification. So what we discussed yesterday was some criteria for decision of a proper match in the ashram. That one is considering that there must be a similarity in values and desire and Krishna consciousness. This is what one must look for. So there must be similar feelings in the area of economic development or how one maintains oneself. There must be similar feelings on whether one is having children or not and how many. And how the children will be raised, educated, what are the values there? What is one's involvement in the spiritual activities, the temple programs, how much service is being rendered in this way? How much we are dependent or independent of the, temple management or authority? Or the ISKCON managerial structure. So these kind of things are what generally creates difficulties in a marriage, even though they're very simple. But it's the simple things that create problem. In management, they say God is in the details. He's inside those. Means, you have so many people get together and they decide, yes. I mean, I saw, give it a nice example. So about, let's see, what was it? 6 years ago. No, 5 years ago. There was a great, yes, let us develop the education in Mayapur. So everybody was thinking, yes. And so in the general principle, everybody was together. You know, yes, big meeting, everything. So then for 2 weeks, for many hours every day, all these devotees they met. But after 2 weeks, they came to no conclusions because each person in that assembly had a totally different idea how one should set up education. So then at the end of it, nothing was decided, and those few teachers, that they just had to go ahead and just do something on their own because no one gave any idea. So in the big picture, there may be common interest or common ground. It may be the common issue, yes, the concept of marriage is very good. We've also decided that the two persons, they should get married. And they've even worked it out, which one's the man, which one's the woman. And, it'd be nice to stay together and do something together. But so those things, that can generally be, those aspects sometimes can be arrived at in a moment. a glance, a little talk. That stuff's already done. But now what follows after that, that is what drives you nuts. Not this stuff. So without considering these, then we find that the husband and wife may have difficulty because factually there's not so much common ground other than something very broad. They both want to be devotees and both want to go back to Godhead and both want to serve Prabhupada's mission. And then other than that, then nothing is common. So therefore the natural, so that must be established first. Then when husband and wife can work together, be peaceful together, then we come to today's discussion. Not soft enough. Oh, I see. So today is basically is discussion. Oh, okay. One other aspect, just a general principle on Varnashram. I think we discussed it in the first seminar, but I'll review it now. Within the ordinary Varnashram system, you have the Shudra doing his activities and on his level of consciousness. So the sphere of the activities there are basically within the realm of the mind and the senses. Or anything that is intellectual but is still based on gathering information from the senses. This is the platform of anamoy. So art is generally dealing with the senses, or even nowadays, even your modern scientists and that, everything is based on the senses. So even though they are supposedly intellectuals, are still doing their intellectualism within the realm of the artist. So, yeah. Then, but higher than this, then is the realm of the Vaishya. Because the Vaishya's realm, he is more interested in the economics, in morality, in all these kind of extended sense gratifications. So many isms are there. That is their realm. Justice. And all these kind of things. They're the realm of pranamoy. In other words, if there's no certain basic justice and these things, then I can't do my business. If there's no rules, then you can come take all my stuff. There has to be rules. This is my stuff, that's your stuff. And then you give me, you exchange something of value for what I have of value. And, if there's disputes, there's a court system. All these things are very important. Yes, so this is the realm of morality. So, be nice to others, don't steal, then you can cooperate nicely for a common advancement of economics. The next then is manamoy. This is the realm of dharma or religiousness. So this is the kshatriyas, because their duty is to establish the dharma, to see that it is going on, that everyone is doing their duties properly according to the shastra. And so the top of this realm, this includes, world religions and all these things, anything that has some philosophy or some idea of God, but no actual understanding of the soul and our relationship with God. So this is then, and the top of this is then the Varnashram Dharma system. It's the top of the kinds of dharma. So the king's business is to establish this. Then the next realm then is Jnanamoy. That is the platform that the Brahmins work. They understand they're not the body, they're interested in Brahman, not within the dharma, artha, and kama of the three lower levels. So now within the Brahman, then there are three levels. There is the Dvija, means he is twice born, so now he is authorized to study the Veda. He may have received Brahminical initiation, but still he doesn't understand or perform the duties that a Brahmin does. Then, once they start to study, and then they learn, and they become expert within some aspect of the Vedic culture and knowledge. So when they have this knowledge, they come to the second platform. This is called the Vipra, or the pundit. But this means they have knowledge, but don't have the realization. So when they come to the platform of realizing that all this Vedic knowledge is all for the purpose of pleasing the Lord, and they can see all of that knowledge and activities in connection with the Lord, then they come to the third platform, which is called the Vaishnav, or the devotee. And this is the platform of Anandamoy, or transcendental consciousness. So we see the actual main difference in the ordinary Varnashram system is consciousness. So therefore we see Shudras lower than the Vaishyas, lower than Kshatriyas, lower than the Brahman. But in the Daiva Varnashram, that means everyone accepts God as the center of everything. So Varnashram without God, that's the Asurik Varnashram. And Varnashram that is God-centered, that is Daiva Varnashram. So then, in Daiva Varnashram, that means all the members of that are on the platform of Anandamoy. That's the realm of their consciousness. So it doesn't matter what their conditioned nature is. If they're performing the activities of a Brahman, a Vaishya, a Kshatriya, or Shudra, their consciousness is common. So in the Daiva Varnashram system, one varna is not superior to the other because they are all serving Krishna. So it doesn't matter what you do for Krishna, just that you are engaged in Krishna's service. So in Daiva Varnashram, everyone has the consciousness of a Brahman and thus follows the culture of the Brahman. Though we may have different activities we do for Krishna that may be similar to what the Shudras do, the Vaishyas, the Kshatriyas, the Brahmins, that's secondary. So therefore, and we see Srila Prabhupada has established for us the Vaishnava culture, the Daiva Varnashram culture, and it's a Brahminical culture. We see how we eat, how we dress, attending the temple programs, our activities, our values. These are all Brahminical values, Brahminical culture. So then we go back to where we were before. So this means that when we are, the considerations in changing from the Brahmacharya ashram or, you know, being single to the Grihastha ashram, still it follows within the culture of the Brahmins. So the values are still Brahminical. So our considerations on what we do, how we do them, must fit this culture. So we see within this Vaishnav Brahminical culture, the Bhagavat Dharma, then since the basis is spiritual values, then whatever we do in the ashram must have that basis of spiritual value. So the discussion then is the principle of conceiving children. Then what is the platform of consciousness? That we have to, as Srila Prabhupada points out, that the consciousness at the moment of conception, that is what kind of soul will be attracted to the womb. So that is what, so just like we're spending our whole life preparing for the time of death, the moment of death. So we are always chanting, we're always being very careful of our consciousness so that we don't develop any bad habits. So we don't become attached to family members, we don't become attached to some other situation that this is going to save us, but we have to become attached to Krishna that He is going to save us. So then at that moment of death, we can surrender to Krishna, take shelter of Krishna. In the same way, in the Grihastha Ashram, we cannot develop any habits that at that moment of conception are going to make us un-Krishna conscious. Because there's only a moment. You can't change it. Once that moment's passed, that's it. And it's not that just because I'm a great devotee, I'm steady, I go to the temple program, everything's nice, that we always are going to get best quality kids. Because it's quite easy to be Krishna conscious when you're in the kirtan or standing in front of the deities or with the other devotees hearing Bhagavatam, chanting your rounds, you know, outselling some books. It's quite easy. But at the moment of conception, you don't really have all those nice facilities to remind us of Krishna at that point. Therefore, it's very important to understand how the Brahminical culture, the Vaishnava culture, views conception. One story comes to mind, just on the last point before we move into this next point. It is an interesting point, is that you have two very elevated personalities, Prajapatis, highly qualified, but their child is the biggest and the baddest demon. We have Kasyapa, who is the son of Lord Brahma. So out of unlimited amounts of living entities, there's only a few of them become sons of Brahma. They're the only ones pious enough and qualified enough to be in that position. And Diti was also equally qualified, otherwise she would not have been married to Kasyapa. So their son was the infamous Hiranyakashipu. But now, we look at Hiranyakashipu, there's never been a bigger and a badder demon in the universe. Ravana was small time compared to Hiranyakashipu. He just sat here on this planet and made trouble. He didn't make trouble in the whole universe. What little trouble he did make, he always got cursed for it. He had, 20 curses on his head? No one dared curse Hiranyakashipu. He didn't have any curses. So we have to understand he was the biggest. As Prahlad Maharaj would say, oh, best of the demons. So now his son was Prahlad, who was a pure devotee and one of the, 12 Mahabhagavats. So now, how is that? Right? You would think it would be the opposite. But if we look at it, it was simply due to consciousness only, at the moment of conception. That at the moment of conception, Diti's whole idea was prestige. That her co-wife, Aditi, already had a child. I think it was Vamanadeva. But she didn't have any. So the prestige, the child is like, some wealth, some position, some point of power. So that was her whole motive in having a child, nothing else. And Kasyapa, who was performing he was just finishing his evening yajnas, his duties, then he became bewildered by the request of his wife, the beauty of his wife. So his whole consciousness at that time was simply sense gratification. So therefore, their son was a combination of the wife's desire for prestige and power, Hiranya, and his desire for sense gratification, Kashipu. So then you got Hiranya, Kashipu. So that moment was the critical moment. Not all their austerities and living in their grass hut and doing their yajnas and that, but they weren't doing all that. They were doing that because they're not devotees. So it's also for material purpose. So they became bewildered. While Hiranyakashipu, he had gone for penances and austerities in the Himalayas. This was the first time when he went with his brother, Hiranyaksha. So they went to the forest, and the demigods became very worried because here's the two most powerful demons, and now they're going to perform penances and austerities and become more powerful. So then they went to Lord Brahma. They were all discussing. And then Narad Muni says, don't worry, I'll take care of it. And then he went off with which Muni? With Parvata Muni. They took the form of, sparrows. And they went and sat in a tree, right very close to Hiranyakashipu. And fluffing their feathers, then they sat down very nicely and then started chanting at the top of their voice, Om Namo Narayanaya. So naturally this disturbed the demon. So then then Hiranyakashipu got very upset, opened his eyes and, moved his arms to scare the birds. So we have to understand the whole universe is afraid of Hiranyakashipu. Even he moves his eyebrow, everybody is trembling. But these birds, these two sparrows, right? Smallest of birds, then just moved up the branch a little bit, you know, and then started chanting loudly again. So then Hiranyakashipu became furious. So then he turned around, picked up his bow and arrow, and then he shot an arrow at the birds, but that time they flew away. So then he went back to trying to meditate, but found his mind was too disturbed. He couldn't meditate. So then he decided to go back to the palace and come another time. So then Hiranyakashipu came back to the palace. Everyone was a little surprised he's back already. And then he spent his time, you know, whining and dining and, you know, hearing music, talking with friends, and trying to forget that terrible experience of hearing the Lord's holy name. But he couldn't forget. You know, went way late into the day, into the night, couldn't forget. So then he decided, okay, I'll associate with my wife very intimately, and naturally I'll forget everything then. But he still didn't forget. So at the moment of conception, he was thinking of that bird chanting, and that bird happened to be Narad Muni, the pure unalloyed devotee. And he was thinking of the Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya. So at the moment of conception, he was chanting the holy name and meditating on the pure devotees. And so he gave birth, his wife gave birth, but he helped. And so then his son was Prahlad Maharaj. So then when the demigods, when they caught Hiranyakashipu's wife and they wanted to kill her because they figured he's a big demon, his son will be a bigger demon, Narad Muni says, no, you don't have to worry. This child's okay. So then he instructed Prahlad Maharaj in the womb because he knew what would be the consciousness of the demon at the time of conception. So we can understand from this how essential is that moment. So therefore, the Brahminical culture is very careful to create, to attract those souls to the womb who will have a great and strong interest in God consciousness. So this means the Brahman, a devotee's concept of sex is very different than others. Means the Vaishnav considers that the act of sex is simply to create God-conscious children. So then this completely changes the whole basis of the Grihastha Ashram from basically how most people conceive of it. Means intimate physical contact is just good, clean fun. As long as nobody gets pregnant, then it's okay. But the problem is then sex is seen as sensual enjoyment, and that becomes the habit. So then if this is seen as sense gratification, and this is the habit, how at the moment of conception are you going to change that idea? Habit means something you do without thinking. Therefore, in the Brahminical culture, they don't show affection and all these things through intimate physical contact, because they know this fact. So intimate physical contact is simply if you want to conceive a child and nothing more. Then one attracts a child, such a child that can be a powerful and strong devotee, detached from material sense gratification. Therefore, Krishna says that conception that is due to planned performance of dharma, then this, Krishna says, that I am that act. Right. Why? Because it is a plan. Krishna gives another alternative also. That the cause for conception is lust, or kama, kamadev, or cupid. But he says the cause. Krishna doesn't say he's the act. He says he's the cause. But in the other, he doesn't say he's the cause. He says he's the act. Very important to note the difference. There's two separate things. One is due to lust. One has a child. So the cause of that lust, that's Krishna. But the act of having the child has nothing to do with Krishna. Or the other is, in a planned way, according to the religious principles, husband and wife plan and decide at an auspicious time to have a child. That act is Krishna. So there's very much difference. One, Krishna doesn't get involved. Indirectly through Cupid, he gets it done. And in the other way, he himself is involved. Of course, when Kamadev is the cause, you know, the senses are more involved, there's more passion, it seems that there's more, you know, happiness out of the whole thing, more fun. But the result is a child who is also driven by lust. So that means driven by the modes of passion and ignorance. Then one has a child. So that means the child will also be controlled, have a nature that is controlled by the modes of passion and ignorance. Well, if we are doing according to Dharma in a very planned way, then this means we can only do this nicely from the platform of goodness. So in a very peaceful, planned way, then one has a child. So that means then the child will also be very peaceful, do things in a very planned way, be, you know, controlled more by goodness or pure goodness, if the parents are in pure goodness. So therefore, the Brahmins don't play around with this in this way. It's a very serious thing, and they keep serious things for that purpose. So because they see this way, they also do not become themselves agitated. The material body then is not seen as a source of sense gratification. And because of this, then when one wants to conceive a child, the body still is not seen as a source of sensual pleasure. And the driving force then is the religious principles. So in that peaceful atmosphere environment, then one can think of Krishna and one can attract best quality children. I hope in the presentation I have not disturbed anyone or upset. Any culture. I've tried to say things in as nice a way as possible, but being specific. So if there's any questions on this, or yes.
We are taught in our movement that we try to do our best as the devotees, and we depend on the result of Krishna. Like you mentioned about dying, that we may have some shortcomings, we may not remember Krishna at the time of death, but because we are trying our best throughout the life, then you know our spiritual master saves us. So can we apply the same understanding to conceiving a child?
Have you heard the question? Question was that just as in the devotee may not be perfect in his endeavors, but he depends upon Krishna. So the time of death may not remember Krishna, but spiritual master helps him, saves him. So in the same way, can we apply this same principle into the grihastha life and in conceiving children? So sometimes when Prabhupada is asked about devotees who had left their body, where would they go? So Prabhupada would mention that if they've thought of Krishna, then they'll go directly to Krishna's pastimes. But if they didn't, then they may, you know, take birth in the heavenly planets, or they may take birth again in the family of devotees, depending upon their desires. But the point is devotional service is not lost. We've done that service. Wherever, Prabhupada said, if you've done 50%, then next life you'll start at 51. So Krishna is taking care, but he will do it in such a way that we come back to him. So in the same way, if we are depending upon Krishna and we are doing our best to please Krishna, then surely Krishna will help. But still, he may help us be more Krishna conscious, but still your consciousness is what's going to create the child. So the endeavor is there, and we depend upon Krishna for the result. So if we understand that, we'll be trying very hard to develop our Krishna consciousness and be Krishna conscious in our family life so that we do get a good result. Not that we sit back and, well, Krishna, whatever Krishna wants. If Krishna wants, then if it doesn't. Therefore, it says, don't become, you know, a mother, a father, a guru, a teacher, a king, or a demigod, unless you can save the dependents from death. Because the parents are the first gurus that the child knows. So the Vedic culture, because they take it, the whole process of human life, so seriously, therefore they get such a good result. See, one has to be very careful. There's the difference that I'm unqualified, I'm depending upon you, Krishna. That is honest. That is appreciated by Krishna. But we're not so qualified, but we're trying, and, you know, of course Krishna will take care. That is not appreciated. That, depending upon how light or severe it is, can fall into the category of the seventh offense to the holy name. Is that we do what we like, but because we're devotees, Krishna naturally, you know, of course, you know, I'm in tight with Krishna, you know, so it happens. You know. So we must take the human form of life very seriously. See, in this platform, then Grihastha is an ashram. It is a shelter for the couple and for their children for going back to Godhead. And therefore, there's no distinction made between the Naistika Brahmacharya and the Upakurvana, because both have the same purpose and same training and same culture in their practice to go back to Godhead. It's just a matter of time. And 20 years is not a big amount of time. So, but the result will be the same. Both are detached from the material world, detached from material enjoyment. Right? This is also the reason that the Brahmins, they can go out in one life because they're not bewildered or attached to the material sense gratification. Once this Prabhupada was explaining the basic principles of this, I think in New Vrindavan. And after explaining these fundamental points, then, what's his name? The New Vrindavan intellectual. Yeah, Hayagriva. Hayagriva says, what? You only have sex once a month just to have kids? I mean, that's no fun. What's the use? So then Prabhupada said, yes, very intelligent boy. Now you have understood. So because it is not of a great importance, means the sense gratification for the Brahman, therefore what's to attract them to stay in the material world? They don't have great wealth. They're not into sense gratification. You know, these are all they're not into power. So all the things that someone stays in the material world for, control, enjoy, attachments, therefore, you know, they just do their spiritual life and go back to Godhead. Therefore, the Vaishnavas follow the Brahminical culture. The Kshatriya culture, power is the most important thing. Vaishya culture, money and wealth is the most important thing. And the Shudra culture, their fame and their senses are the most important thing. You always see like big musicians, this, that. They always want to become the most famous. Like that. They're always worried about things. So, therefore, these cultures are not really suitable for the devotee whose only interest is pleasing Krishna. Because the Brahminical culture is based on knowledge. And so the Vaishnavas take the realized aspect of the knowledge, of the transcendental knowledge, and that becomes their foundation of their culture. And from that position, they try to develop their love for Krishna. Is that it? Any other questions? Yes.
Is another explanation of conception once a month is that it's like when you go to an airline office and you ask how often you fly to New York, so they tell you once a month. It doesn't mean that you fly every month to New York, but you just take 1 month
to make a line. Yes, good point. Uh-huh. He was saying that another explanation of once a month according to religious principles is you may go to the airline office and say, how often does this flight go? And they say once a month. It doesn't mean every month you're flying on that flight, but you choose that date according to what is the proper convenience for service, then you take the flight.
Yes. I heard from one Gaudiya devotee that he said that in Shastra's injection that householder can have some connection with once in a month.
That's Gaudiya Math.
Yeah, I
heard. Yeah, see, Gaudiya Math, they have a different, a little slightly different concept. Because you see, the mission, yeah, the question, the point is that the Gaudiya Math, he was talking with somebody there from there, and they said, well, once a month, you can do whatever you like. You know? So, there we see that the institution is called Gaudiya Math. Mutt, the definition of it is a place where brahmacharis and sannyasis only reside. So, factually speaking, the Gaudiya Math only gives shelter to those who live in the mutt. And those who are outside, they can do whatever they like. They also say, there's a saying, what is it? Don't let the beads get cold. Is that it? Don't neglect the beads. You know, at least chant, you know, four rounds a day. So we can understand that their standard or level of dealing with their community is not that high. So, and Prabhupada had a very high standard. Because Prabhupada's standard is, those who are serious, get out of here in one lifetime. Well, you won't find that kind of preaching in the Gaudiya Math to their congregation. Also, we have so many devotees who live in the temple. We're not a mat, we're a temple. And that everybody, men, women, children, everybody's living in the temple. So our standard of those who live in the temple and those who are take spiritual life very seriously, then should be on this level. Otherwise, of course, one can. Point is no one's there to watch. You can do whatever you want. But just remember, at the moment of conception, you get what you pay for. The Vedic scriptures give so many levels. I mean, first, you follow this rule, it pleases Krishna. You don't want to please Krishna? Okay, you follow this rule, and you can become liberated from material existence. Or if you don't want to, you're not so interested in liberation, okay, by following these, then you can get all these pious benefits, all these, you know, position, the heavenly planets, all kinds of wealth, power, influence, all that. You know, you're more practical like that. You know, like that, not so theoretical. Then, okay, you do this, and then here, you will enjoy these facilities on this earth planet now in this body. And then the last is, if you don't want to follow this rule, fine. But you're going to go to this hell for so many hundreds of thousands of years, and you're going to suffer in this way. So the Vedic literatures work on that platform, right? Like we preach Ekadasi, pleasing to Krishna, mother of devotion. We only talk transcendental aspects. Gaudiya Math put out a publication. I think it's called Ekadasi Vrata Mahatmya or something. All it does is tell all the Karmakanda stories on how, you know, this one did follow Ekadasi and he got a son, so that was Putrada Ekadasi. This one did this and they got, you know, liberation, that's Mokshada Ekadasi. You know, different ones like this. And so therefore the congregation, you know, who does whatever they want once a month and keeps their beads warm by chanting four rounds, then they're inspired to follow Ekadasi because they'll also get other material benefits. So, see, the ground has already been broken by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So now Prabhupada's come along to, you know, make the plants and grow things nicely. So we have to remember, our consciousness is what is there. We attract a child of similar consciousness. So it's whether we want a child who represents the best of our consciousness or the worst. Like that. So we have to be very careful. Like that. The choice is ours. Yes, Matis.
I understand the importance of
following
the communication culture and principles of plan. But just out of curiosity, I'm asking this. For example, in our society, we see so many powerful, strong devotees, pure devotees, that they are coming from materialistic families. Some of them are Western families. And at the same time, we see that, for example, Lord Nityananda or Bhaktivinoda Thakur have some sons that they were spiritually inclined, and some others they were. And also even Srila Prabhupada have sons that they were not all, I don't know, pure devotees. Then I wonder if this has some explanation.
She was saying that in this principles that is being described here, then we see like Advaitacharya or Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Nityananda or, you know, so many, they have also, or Srila Prabhupada, have also had children. And some of them were not always, you know, of high devotional standard. So two points are there. One is the Lord's pastime to prove a particular point. And second is the importance of association. Because it says even a Uttamadhikari, if they hear Mayavad philosophy, can fall down from their position. Right? So if they get bad association, then one can fall from an elevated position. The other thing is it teaches us to not be attached, that it's not just because we're devotees, our children are automatically pure devotees. This way we look at our children in a very, objective way rather than subjective. Objective means we look at it not from the platform of attachment. Yes. Then if we look in an objective way, then we can actually figure out what the child actually needs for his training. And we will be able to work cooperatively with others on how to train the child, you know, which will be the discussion tomorrow, is the dealings with the children, what things, how we deal, the culture we follow, how that affects the children, you know, the concepts of education. These things we'll discuss tomorrow. One more question and we'll stop. Ganga, yeah.
Well, according to the Vedic culture, a woman who has only one child is considered barren.
Oh, why is she?
Why?
Ah. Question is, why in the Vedic culture is a woman who has only one child considered barren? The concept is that because the material world is not necessarily so safe. So if something happens to that one child, then she won't have any children. So therefore it's considered two will ensure that she'll always have a child.
Like you mentioned about this conception thing, you mentioned that this is done for sense gratification, then the cause is Krishna. If it is done based on religious principles, Krishna is the end of that. So is he also the cause of that religious act, or
he's the cause of everything, but we have to take the question in its...
Can you explain it?
Naturally, he's the cause of everything. Point is Krishna is just pointing out in the Bhagavad Gita how he enters everything. It means the material nature is dead matter. But only because Krishna enters it, we become attracted. Right? Just like the soul is in the body, we are attracted to a person. Soul's not in the body, we're not attracted, because it's dead matter. Dead matter doesn't attract us. So therefore, when Krishna enters as Cupid, then naturally we become attracted. But if we follow devotional process, which is also Krishna, then we follow the dharmic method. Okay? So of course he's the cause, but we're trying to point out the difference in consciousness. Okay. So we'll end here. Thank you very much.